This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Let's take a quick recap of the international news of the past week or so. The presidents of North Korea and South Korea had an unprecedented meeting. Donald Trump pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal. And we have a new Secretary of State, which is good since we may or may not be in a trade war with our partner and rival, China. If the headlines give you panic attacks, and maybe they should, think for a minute about the people who have to respond professionally to all of these developments in real time, hour by hour. The complexity of world events can't be easily modeled by some flowchart or an algorithm. So diplomats and policy analysts and senior military officials sometimes turn to unusual tools to understand how things may turn out. Here's contributor Simon Parkin reporting from the UK.
There's a story from the Second World War that you probably haven't heard before. It's about U-boats. They were the Nazi submarine fleet. And they were causing a great deal of trouble for the British.
This is not a dressed-up propaganda story. It's telling you that this U-boat, one of the wolves that hunt in packs in the Atlantic, is as dangerous to your home as a 1,000-pound bomb from the air.
There is no. The Germans were using the U-boats to sink convoys of supplies en route to England at an alarming rate, sometimes hundreds each month. Winston Churchill came to believe that the outcome of the entire war rested on dealing with the U-boats. So he called up a retired naval captain named Gilbert Roberts. Roberts was a tactician, an outside-of-the-box thinker. And at a secret naval base in Liverpool, he came up with an unusual plan to help the Navy sink those U-boats.
Battleship! Battleship!
He designed a game.
It's loaded with action and suspense. Play it
anytime. Imagine a game of Battleship, but the board is the size of an entire room. One person plays the U-boat commander, and the other plays the convoy commander. They give their orders from the side of the room, and aides draw out the battle in chalk on the floor. Here's Major Tom Moat. He's an expert on war games.
The movements of the escorts and the convoy were done in white chalk, and the movements of the German submarines were done in brown chalk that was exactly the same colour as the wood, so that the escort commanders who were giving orders for their ships couldn't see where the submarines were.
A lot of the naval staff was out at sea commanding escorts, so the players in Robert's game were mainly new recruits to the Women's Royal Naval Service. These Wrens, as they were known, were mostly 18, 19 years old. Every day they played out different naval battle scenarios in Robert's game. After a few months, an admiral, one of the most successful submarine commanders of the First World War, in fact, went to Liverpool to see what progress, if any, Robert's group was making.
He said, I'll have a go. I'll be the submarine commander and I'll play against the convoy. And he was sunk six times out of six. So he said, who was commanding the escort? And it was one of the 19-year-old Wrens.
Her name was Janet O'Kell and she was actually 18. By playing this war game, she and the other women had come up with a strategy to sink German U-boats. And it worked.
Now, there's a moment there where, you know, the senior officer could get very crusty and very angry. But he didn't. He was like, That's incredibly effective. That was then made in to naval instructions and radioed out to the convoys. And 2 hours later, they sank their first U-boat.
Before one could say, "Hail Hitler," the escorting warships closed in around their precious charges and proceeded to teach the Nazis a lesson.
It's a story that probably deserves a Spielberg movie, but it's not unique. For hundreds of years, war games have been powerful tools for military commanders and diplomats. Even today, they are played at the highest levels all around the world.
I've played Matrix games in the USA. I have played Matrix games in China. Haven't done it with the Russians. Don't think I'm going to get permission.
But Tom's games aren't about drawing lines on the floor. In the era of ISIS and fake news, you need a new kind of war game.
Matrix games are very simple games based on oral arguments.
And Major Tom is an expert on Matrix games. If what the Wrens were up to in Liverpool looked like Battleship, Tom's games looked like a cross between Risk, Dungeons & Dragons, and a rap battle. I visited Tom at the Defence Academy of the UK, where he teaches young officers how to wage international war on a tabletop.
Could you just tell me a little bit about, so we've got on the table a board about the size of a picnic blanket that sort of got Ukraine at the top and goes all the way down to Egypt. Is this something you use in various...
In Tom's games, each player represents a country. You all sit around a map, and when it's your go, you say one thing that you'd like your country to do. A facilitator, which is kind of like what the military calls a dungeon master, asks the other players if they think that'll work.
Because, of course, the academic theory behind it is crowdsourcing the result.
There's a debate about whether you'll succeed, and if you can't all agree, well, that's where the dice come in.
I tend to use casino dice, just in case, so they're properly balanced.
Tom takes dice very seriously.
Now, of course, some people go, "Oh, you're rolling dice. It's just a game of chance." Well, if you think that, then you don't understand risk. And if you don't understand risk, then perhaps you really ought to be in another job.
Major Tom's games have a simple framework, but they do allow players to bring an almost infinite amount of complexity to the table. You can do anything you can imagine, or at least anything you can make an argument for. That flexibility makes these war games very useful for untangling the complicated reasons why countries act the way they do. I talked to David Schlepak. He's an expert in wargaming at the RAND Corporation in Washington.
I've been at this for a very long time. I go back to the Cold War, and so we use them to look at global nuclear war and how you get into it and how you manage not to get into it. The major success for us is, do we move the needle on policy? Do folks take what they learn from the games and use it to change what they do when they go back to their day jobs? When we were first starting to imagine a world where North Korea had nuclear weapons. And so we set up a series of games where we asked the question, well, what would it mean for North Korea to have a small number of nuclear weapons? And we brought in a very senior player, a very smart man, a very good friend of mine, actually, who had done time in the Department of Defense as a senior policymaker. And he walked into the room at the start of the game and said, well, look, I don't understand why this is even a problem. They have 2, 3, 5 nuclear weapons. We have 1,500 nuclear weapons. I can do this math. And then we played the game, and he walked out of the room going, oh, holy Christmas, this is a gigantic problem. This changes everything.
So to see firsthand how wargaming can change your perspective, I sat in on a game Major Tom was running at the Defense Academy. It was kind of a big day in international relations. You may remember it.
The British Prime Minister Theresa May has explicitly blamed Russia for the poisoning of the former double agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter, and has expelled 23 Russian diplomats in response.
Come on in. No, we haven't actually started yet. So, who would you like to be with?
I'd like to be with Russia.
I thought you might. Grab a seat.
Straight off the picket line.
Like many people, I spent a fair bit of time worrying what Russia is up to. And this seemed like a pretty good way to get some insight. Now, for security reasons, all the players have to remain anonymous. But I can say that the guy playing Russia looked to me like a friendly university professor. He didn't much resemble Vladimir Putin, but he certainly had a talent for Putin's style of diplomacy.
Okay, Russia, what do you want to happen this turn?
I'm going to make a public televised announcement.
Yes.
Where we're basically going to indicate the UK is a third-rate power that is throwing a tantrum in order to sort of distract attention from its own political problems at home.
That idea was debated by the group.
Very few people believe Russia anymore, and they know, and they believe full well that it's just obfuscation.
Does anyone think that that's going to make the UK government look worse or better?
I think it's very arguable.
And the dice came out.
So, that was a four. So, the way it would be interpreted in the game is that Putin's attempts to discredit Theresa May actually increase her standing in the rest of the eyes of the world. So, sadly, that one didn't work very well. Ukraine, what are you up to?
A setback. But it didn't discourage our Putin much. The next turn, he made a similarly gutsy move, offering to send humanitarian aid convoys to eastern Ukraine. Now, you may remember, that's the part of Ukraine that's sporadically under attack by Russia.
When I say humanitarian aid convoys, the urge to put air quotes around it is overpowering. Okay, now, Ukraine, will you accept these aid convoys?
Absolutely not. Yes. Last time they sent aid convoys in, they were full of little green men that suddenly all had a Kalashnikov up their jumper.
Turn after turn, the other countries in the game tried to hem Russia in. The tactics they used were worryingly creative.
Also demand that the Russian ambassador attend the Secretary of State when we get a new one.
I'm taking Russia to the International Maritime Court of Arbitration.
We will conduct joint operational trials with the Queen.
Chechen sympathisers and separatists firebomb and attack Sochi naval base.
It could be easy to forget how complicated international relations are until someone gives you a seat in the Situation Room.
11! 11! Congratulations on a spectacular bit of diplomacy. I don't know who you got to run it, whether it was Bill Gates.
When the game is over, Tom asks everyone what their nation's goals were.
Okay, Russia, what were your objectives?
Well, the first one, you could take it one of two ways, one of three ways, is to ruin Britain's international reputation. That, on the face of it, went completely wrong. Theresa May now has two choices. She's either strong enough to take Brexit forward, which means job done for us.
Yes.
Or she's strong enough to take hold of her own party and stop Brexit from happening, which means job down for us. One of those two things will happen. The second one was to basically maintain the position of our good ally Assad in Syria.
So basically, the Russians have managed to manipulate events to achieve their goals. Even with five extremely creative antagonists and some bad luck with the dice, Russia still kind of won. They controlled the game. This, Major Tom tells me, is not unusual. Outside the realm of professional sports, with their stratospheric salaries and primetime TV coverage, games are usually viewed as frivolous, something that should be set down after childhood, probably only picked up again in retirement. But those who work at the highest levels of defence and national security view games pretty differently. Here they are seen as perhaps the most efficient, tactile way in which theories can be tested and refined, and through which vital, potentially life-saving experience is gained. In war games, the actions of nations, armies and diplomats can be understood, maybe even predicted. And as warfare grows ever more complex, ever more frightening, the war games adapt. And the knowledge, the understanding they provide, could mean the difference between victory and defeat, even between war and peace.
So Simon Parkin reports for The New Yorker on gaming and other subjects, and you can find his work at newyorker.com.